This is Age of Treason Radio.
First thing I remember was asking Papa why. Oh, there were many things I didn't know.
On the White Network.
By the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's gone. You better learn your past, you better learn your young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel. The title of this installment is Jewish Crypsis, Crypto-Jews. This is not Religion Part 5. In fact, this is Part 9 of this Jewish Crypsis series, but I realize that these giving part numbers to these things makes people's eyes glaze over if they're trying to evaluate whether they're interesting to listen to or not. So, I do both. I try to give descriptive titles to the installments that I make and sometimes fall back on multiple parts. But this installment I'm going to dedicate to circling back to the beginning. And the title that I chose for this long series, what's turned out to be a 9-part series now, and there'll probably be at least one more beyond this, maybe two, is Jewish Crypsis, which is, I mentioned in the very first in the series, which I titled An Introduction, and talked about the word crypsis in particular, and that it comes from ecology, where it means the ability of an organism to avoid observation or detection by other organisms. So we're circling back to that in discussing this topic of crypto-Jews, which is a very real phenomena, a very core, essential part of Jewishness, of Jewish identity, of who the Jews are, the nature of the Jews, is this crypsis and hiding, passing, being secretive, being dishonest about who they are. And they themselves use the term crypto-Jews. There are several other common terms for it. Secret Jews and hidden Jews are two other common terms that mean essentially the same thing. There are also, in the context of Jews converting to Christianity, specific terms, new Christians, conversos, and Moranos. And we're going to talk about all of these and a few more in this installment. It reminds me of how Eskimos supposedly have a lot of words for the different kinds of snow that they experience, because they're always in snow. They're familiar with all the little nuances. And the Jews have a lot of words to describe their crypsis. And each of these words, although the ones I just cited are for the most part synonymous, there are subtle shades of difference in these various terms, and we'll get into that. The second installment in this series was the name game, where I talked about the distinctive Jewish names, how Jews can be recognized sometimes by the names themselves, the origins of those names, and how the Jews change those names sometimes in order to blend in as part of their crypsis. And then I did a two-part series of installments on nose jobs and more, which was about Jewish physical traits, especially in the face, and how the Jews changed them, specifically with nose jobs and other plastic surgery. And then there was an installment on – actually a series of three installments on religion, but each one of them was different. The first part focused on Torah, Tanakh, and Talmud, and how that's related to things that Christians understand, the Bible, the Old Testament of the Bible. And then in part two, talked about the Zohar and Kabbalah and the Hasidim and the Haredim, the so-called ultra-Orthodox Jews. And then in part three of religion, talked about Jewish peoplehood. And I think that that was a major point, too, as to the nature of Jews being peoplehood, not so much religion. That religion is really just a cover story for who the Jews are. And it fools other people who aren't Jews, who think of their own religion as something spiritual about their beliefs in God and afterlife and morality. And all of those things the Jews think about too, but the key understanding there is that the Jews think of the Jewish people as God. And one of the quotes, one of the important quotes, I thought, in the whole series, and but in this part three in particular of religion, was a Jew trying to describe how the God relates to the Jewish people, and she said, "Without God, arguments for Jewish continuity, that there should be Jews in the future, end up resorting to ethnic chauvinism." And as I've said, this dance that Jews do about pretending that Jewishness is religion rather than peoplehood, but at other times talking quite openly about peoplehood, and we'll see some more examples of that in this installment, is really all just a dance around that realization of theirs that they have to pretend that they believe in a God and that it's all about religion, so that other people don't realize that what it really is ethnic chauvinism. It's peoplehood. And then in part four of religion, I talked about these supposedly religious concepts, which actually have very little to do with spirituality or religion, and that is the Moser, the informer, and how that's considered the highest crime amongst Jews, and Kol Nidre, the oath to not obey any oaths or take any oath seriously in the coming year, and Purim, and how that's the story of Esther, the most famous crypto-Jewess of all, and how she manipulates one group of non-Jews into exterminating another for the benefit of the Jews. And the common theme in all of this Jewish Crypsis series has been how Jews are able to change themselves, at least on the outside, and how it's not because they want to stop actually being Jews. It's because they want to remain Jews, that they pretend to change in some way or another, either physically or by name, or change their religion. And we're going to focus in this installment on changing that outward religion. It could be a part five of the religion series, but I thought that that was getting a bit tired. And I think the concept of crypto-Jews is fairly well known to people who start to understand the Jews. One of the first things that they realize that wakes them up to who the Jews are is they learn about this concept of crypto-Jews. It's not hard to find information about it, in spite of the fact that it's called hidden Jews and secret Jews. It's an open secret as to, you know, this, at least the existence of this feature of the Jews historically. Of course, the open issue is, what about today? What about right now? Who's hiding their Jewishness? And it turns out, I have two stories to cite here about that, ripped from the headlines, just in the news this year. In fact, the first one I'll cite is titled, "Hidden Jews of Poland Visit Israel," dated 1st of September 2013. And it's a story about 16 young Polish Jews who just recently, at least some of them, recently discovered their Jewish roots and how they were going to Israel for a special seminar organized by Shavei Israel, an organization that aims to strengthen the connection between descendants of Jews and the State of Israel and the Jewish people. So there's the reminder that this is about peoplehood, not religion. The article, again, mentions a little further on rekindling their bond with the Jewish people. It mentions Jewish people, the phrase Jewish people, several times, because that's what's important to these people writing the article and to these Polish Jews is this Jewish peoplehood. Here's an interesting sentence. They represent the future of Polish Jewry, which despite decades of suffering and persecution is now beginning to thrive. And this is another common theme. I said it's probably the central aspect of Jewish identity is this self-image as persecuted people, that they're part of a group. To be a Jew means I'm part of a group that is persecuted. That's the number one feature of Jews and how they think of themselves. And yet, in the same sentence, they talk about how the Jews are thriving. And this, too, this you could consider this a corollary, that the Jews see themselves as persecuted, and yet they're always thriving. And the most prominent example of crypto-Jews, which we'll get to here shortly, comes out of Spain. And boy, did the Jews thrive in Spain up until their expulsion in 1492. Another notable paragraph in this article about the Polish Jews is, quote, "There can be no sweeter revenge for what was done to us 7 decades ago in Poland than to reconnect as many of these young Polish Jews as possible with Israel and the Jewish people." That's a quote that's attributed to Michael Freund, Freund means friend in German, but he's taken a German name. And he's the founder and or at least runs Shave Israel, this organization that's doing this. And there's the Jewish people again in that quote. This group doesn't really have a name. It's from only 7 decades ago. But I'd like to say something about that too. I mean, only 7 decades ago, so they're known as the Hidden Jews of Poland. They don't have a special name like many of the other groups do. But 7 decades is a long time. It's about the length of a human life. You know, on the good side, you might live to be 70. You might hope to live to 70. And yet, Jews have this long memory, and this is really just a short term when it comes to Jewish memory about who their enemies are and who's done them wrong. I mean, it goes back to the dimmest beginnings of their own identity and their own history that they tell themselves. And Esther, you know, they remember that long ago and exterminating their enemies from that long ago, and have been erasing the names of their enemies ever since. The second snatch from the headlines story about crypto Jews comes from a blog I wrote back in May of this year. I titled it "Peekaboo, Another Jew." It was about Venezuela's new leader who had just come to power in the wake of Hugo Chavez dying. His name was Nicolas Maduro, and he announced after winning election in Venezuela that my grandparents were Jewish, and they converted to Catholicism in Venezuela at some point. He was kind of sketchy about the details of that. I haven't tracked the story. I don't know if more details have come up. But at the time, he said even the Minister of Communication and Information in the country also comes from a similar background. And the comments, I want to urge you to go and read this blog post because, you know, I made some good points. But then in the comments, several other people showed up to pile on, to add their own information, which I thought was excellent comments about the prevalence, the number of crypto Jews in South America and in positions of power. And, you know, I don't usually see that topic mentioned very much, and it's especially considering the supposed white Hispanics that are all over Republican politics, especially in the United States, and how this has turned into a very positive attitude, not only with the Democrats, the People of Color Party, but also with the Republican leadership in favor of massive Mexican and South American immigration into the United States. And I don't think I've ever seen really a reference to what impact crypto Jews and the crypto Jewish connection there has had between the Jews who have so much power in the United States and the Jews who have so much power in Mexico and other Central and South American countries, and what common interests they see with each other to have arranged for this to happen. Also in the comments was an instructive exchange, a revelation from a commenter named On Watch, who calls himself On Watch on my blog and on Blogspot, but who I suspect is Stuart from he was a frequent caller to Carolyn Yeager's shows, and at one point within this past year, I don't recall exactly which program it was, but Carolyn and I were on together, and Stuart called in and admitted for the first time that he was actually a Jew, a full-blooded Jew. And in the comment thread of this Nicolas Maduro post, he explains that, you know, he argues that, well, you know, you shouldn't judge people by their Jewish heritage. You know, don't exclude Jews based just on their blood and their genetics, because after all, look at me, On Watch. I'm a Jew, and yet I've been a fervent supporter of George Lincoln Rockwell and the National Alliance, William Pierce, for 20 years. And so you should not judge Jews. Not all Jews are bad, was his main point. And this is something that Carolyn and I have grappled with ourselves in this network, and it wasn't hard to grapple with, really. I mean, it's pretty easy, and I recommend the exclusion of Jews genetically, and that if somebody is partly Jewish, that they should be excluded from positions of leadership and even from citizenship in an all-white nation, and that is sometimes considered and regarded as a too hard line, as unnecessary. And I would argue that this series about crypto Jews and about Jewish Crypsis is actually evidence. I'm making the case that Jews can't be trusted, that it's a historic problem of Jews pretending to convert, and maybe in some cases even sincerely, but then their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren decide, hey, I'm part Jewish, and I'm going to revert to my Jewish identity. So it's something that anybody who's pro-white, anybody who's race-aware, Jew-aware, this is one of the things that they need to be aware of. And Stuart makes that makes an example of that, a very, very good example. So anyway, in my previous installment to talking about Talmud and Torah, it came to my mind about this. What I wanted to talk about here is that one of the elements of that Torah and Talmud was the informers that converted, the converts, the most notorious critics of the Talmud and of Jews in the Middle Ages were Jewish converts. Nicholas Donin and Pablo Christiani and Johannes Pfefferkorn were the three names that I picked out and identified directly. But in this context, I want to talk now and move to the main focus, and it'll probably have to, you know, go on into part two, and that is the Inquisition, which is really the beginning of modern day. Even though it was 500 years ago, and even though there were expulsions and conversions and conversos and or whatever crypto Jews prior, that it was an earthquake really of historic proportions of what happened in Spain in the 1400s and round about the turn into the 1500s, especially, is when it came to a head. And that was the Inquisition. And the famous figure associated with that is Torquemada. And I had read in various places or seen allusions to the fact that Torquemada, did you know if Torquemada was a Jew? Well, I don't know how trustworthy it is, but Wikipedia addresses this a little bit and mentions that he was notorious for his zealous campaign against the crypto Jews and crypto Muslims in Spain. And it talks about his supposed Jewish ancestry, and it says that he was only the nephew of the grandson of a converso. which I thought was interesting, that that's a pretty tenuous connection. But it was interesting because it connects to this in that very article. It links to the Alhambra decree, which was the decree by which the Jews were expelled in 1492 from Spain. And this was after decades of Inquisition and attempts to convert the Jews to Christianity, and the Christians, the old Christians, the Spaniards, being unhappy with the Jews because many of them were false in their conversion. They converted, but they retained their Jewish identities, their Jewish traditions, and married within themselves, and remained powerful in many cases. And when you read things like the Wikipedia articles, which are from a Jewish point of view, a positive from the Jewish point of view, and by the Jewish version of history, that the Jews were so oppressed, you don't get this understanding that I've tried to convey in discussing this, which is that the Spaniards, of course, in supposedly oppressing the Jews, were reacting to something. They weren't just oppressing the Jews for no reason whatsoever. And in this case, at the very least, what you can read between the lines is that they resented Jewish power and Jewish influence. And as we can see from our own example today, that it's very likely that the Jews were abusing this power that they had over the local native people of Spain, and not even counting the 700 years under Islamic rule and how that came to be and how the Jews thrived under that. But that's one of the points that comes out in the page on the Alhambra decree. It describes how, beginning in the 8th century, Muslims had conquered and settled most of the Iberian Peninsula. Jews, who had lived in these regions since Roman times, were considered, quote-unquote, people of the book and given special status and often thrived under Muslim rule. There's that word thrive again. They're always thriving. The tolerance of the Muslim Moorish rulers of Al-Andalus, that's what the Muslims called Spain, attracted Jewish immigration, and Jewish enclaves in Muslim Iberian cities flourished in places of learning and as places of learning and commerce. No doubt. Toward the bottom of that article is another interesting note, bringing it up to date as of today. As of November 2012, Sephardic Jews have been given the right to automatic Spanish nationality without the requirement of residence in Spain. That's amazing. The Jews that want to claim this citizenship don't even have to live in Spain. It goes on. Prior to November 2012, Sephardic Jews already had the right to obtain Spanish citizenship after a reduced residency period of 2 years versus the 10 years for other people, for foreigners. And I want to point out about this is how, as I said, the Jews are special. They want to be treated special, and they get that treatment. And anything short of being treated special in a positive way, they interpret as persecution. In the same way that you can interpret the Jewish people as God by reading between the lines of what they have to say about God and the Jewish people, you can do the same thing with persecution, which is so central to their identity, and see it as thriving and getting special privileges in the light of the Jews always complaining about persecution. That's how you understand it, that anything short of thriving and special treatment in a positive sense, they paint as and see as persecution. So let me move on here to an article titled, "So You Think You're a Crypto Jew?" in the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. And this gets a little bit into the vocabulary here and an explanation of some of these words that I've already started to use without defining. And I'm sure many listeners are familiar with these terms, but let me just get into the description of some of the nuances here. Technically, a converso refers to a person who underwent a conversion himself or herself, but the term has been used to refer to their descendants as well. A crypto Jew or secret Jew is someone who practices his or her Judaism secretly while openly professing another religion. So you see, you can be a converso, a Jew who's converted. and be sincere. And in fact, if somebody calls somebody a converso, that's usually what they mean. It's somebody who's converted, as far as they know, is feels sincere that they thought that they've changed. They're no longer a Jew. But a crypto Jew is someone who tries to maintain their Jewishness, who converts supposedly, but remains a Jew in their own mind and their own habits. This article goes on. Anusim, and this is an important word. The Jews are most frequently use this word, anusim, is a Hebrew term for people who were forced to convert against their will, while meshumadim refer to the willing converts. So they make a distinction there between the people who were forced to convert by Christians and the Jews who converted willingly. And it's interesting that they make that distinction, but they do. The term Marano is more complex, and there are many different histories for the term. The one that makes the most sense to me, the author of writing this article, is a combination of two Hebrew words, mumar, which means convert, and anus, which means compelled one. Marano means swine, which contradicts what this author just wrote. In Spanish, it means swine, and was meant as a pejorative term used by Jews who did not convert to describe Jews who did. That was amazing to me to read that sentence, because in every discussion I've ever read of the word Marano, it's described as pig. It means pig. It's an insult of Jews who have converted falsely, of crypto Jews, basically, secret Jews, and that it was always an anti-Semitic term created by anti-Semites and used by anti-Semites. And this is the first reference to it that I've ever seen, and this is Jewish Telegraph Agency that claims that it was actually Jews who coined the word. And it makes sense that it was the Jews who did not convert that resented the Jews that did for compromising on their Jewishness. Now, some of the other meanings of Marano, there's no denying that the word Marano has negative connotations. And when you look up Anusim in Wikipedia, in fact, it says, as I said, Marano is the insulting term Spanish anti-Semites gave to the Anusim. When you look up Marano in Wikipedia's entry for that, it describes it as originally the term was used by common people. The insult was mostly racist, as people viewed in a superstitious and prejudiced way the descendants of forced new Christians as a racial group identifiable by their bad denture, which allegedly proved their sinful soul. And then it goes on a little later. Marano acquired connotations of, quote, filthy, dirty, unquote, and unscrupulous during the heyday of the Spanish Inquisition, when the term was used to impugn the character of recalcitrant crypto-Jews. Well, as I was starting to say there, those negative connotations, there's no doubt that the word acquired negative connotations, like nigger or kike did, whereas nigger just meant black originally, but it acquired negative connotations from the behavior of the people it was used and associated with. So I'm out of time in this installment, but we're not done talking about the subject of crypto Jews. There's much more to talk about, and mainly we're still going to focus on the Spanish crypto Jews and where they went, and maybe some other related topics, other crypto Jews. I'm not quite sure at this point what exactly all I'm going to cover, but join me in the next time.